Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:58 PM the Central Time. Today is July 15th. I thought we'd kick off with lumber because it gave us a great example of how accelerations are trend endings. So when prices are surging higher, then it encourages people to speculate, and they're encouraged in by the bullish action and by the expectation that it will last indefinitely. But then, of course, you also have the other side of the equation, which is that when you get these accelerating prices, it tends to destroy demand, and you get demand for substitution starting to creep in. So as prices rose, then people who had been planning to build homes found that they were no longer able to afford to, because lumber prices had gone so high. It impacted the construction sector, because home builders had to reach out to buyers who'd already put down deposits and demand a further down payment because they couldn't cover the costs. So it delayed starts. So even as prices were rising, then the factors that would contribute to the decline were also mounting, and we've seen that prices accelerated down as well. So they've now pretty much unwound all of the advance, and we're coming back down below the $600 level that was the peak back in 2018, and there's the realistic possibility that prices could fall further. But of course, we are also now accelerating on the downside. So when we start to see limits on the upside and big upper dynamics, well, then that will be the sign that the market is beginning to stabilize. I do think it's particularly relevant to pay attention to this, because the impact that it had on the housing market was one of the factors that certainly contributed to the perception of inflationary pressures starting to rise. And then when we think about what's happening with semiconductors, I thought that this particular section from a news article about Taiwan Semiconductor's outlook or sales outlook was particularly relevant. And it's that the company will ramp up production of microcontrollers to close to 60% this year. And it's going to start in the current quarter. And those are the semiconductors that the automobile sector generally tends to buy. So the other source of significant inflationary pressure this year has been from the semiconductor sector, and there will likely still be some shortages of different parts or different kinds of semiconductors into 2022. But it is looking increasingly likely that we are currently in the process of putting in a peak in terms of supply inelasticity. And then we should remember that semiconductors are a highly cyclical sector. There has been a very large quantity of money deployed to increase supply. There has been a large amount of money deployed and committed to go out and build whole new factories to supply the automotive sector. So it is quite likely that by the time we get to the end of this year, the semiconductor shortage in the automotive sector will be a thing of the past, and they will be assured of security of supply for their components going out well into the future. And that's not good news for semiconductor companies, because they will certainly have the ability to sell more, but there won't be the same degree of margins, and there won't certainly be the same shortages. So the high margin that they've enjoyed for the last year will evaporate. And that's why Taiwan Semiconductor was in negative territory today. And we can also, I think, quite clearly recognize that the share peaked at least 4 months ago. And now it is susceptible to some additional weakness. And the failure to hold the breakout this week is not an encouraging sign, but it's not the worst performing of the semiconductor shares. When we think about, for example, microchip technologies, it's breaking down, and this looks like a completing top formation. So that suggests that this divergence in performance that we've seen in the semiconductor sector over the last few months is now being exaggerated. One of the best performers in the sector has been Nvidia, and that was also in negative territory today and susceptible to some additional consolidation. It could fall by an additional $150 and still be in the region of the trend mean. So this has been a really spectacular advance, going from $550 to $800 in the space of a couple of months, and now we are seeing some of that beginning to unwind. So then when we think about what are the inflationary pressures that are likely to contribute to the argument that we really are in an inflationary environment, well, I think that the one to pay particular attention to are the home equity lines of credit, because they've been falling for most of the last decade. And I don't quite remember the ticker, so I just saved the chart. But the most important thing is that this index peaked in approximately 2010, and it has done nothing but decline since. So this would be representative of demand for credit, and it's just not happening. So we have this significant boost in savings that's occurred as a result of the pandemic, and now we have the reopening and a lot of demand for the reopening sectors, such as the health and travel sectors, and really the leisure sectors overall, and people wishing to live their best lives and paying scant attention to what it costs. The big question is whether it will persist, and then will that drive demand for credit? Will people want to go out and buy the better car, buy the bigger boat, buy the bigger house, buy the second home? And all of these factors, will that drive demand for credit? And will that then contribute to inflationary pressures? Those are the big questions that are outstanding. The short-term considerations that have been really a big factor in perceptions over the course of the last 6 months are starting to fade, and it's those bigger questions are outstanding. So that did contribute to some weakness in the stock market in here today, because semiconductors is a large component of the stock market. Then we can think about bond yields, and they were also in negative territory. So generally speaking, when bond yields contract, it's positive for the technology sector, but that's not playing out today. And I think this transition that we're seeing and a rotation away from semiconductors is potentially going to be disruptive. It's also going to throw focus onto the kinds of companies that aren't particularly reliant on semiconductors. But Amazon, for example, was also in negative territory today, and investors will be looking to see whether it can hold this break above the $3,500 level. Then, when we think about Netflix, they announced that they're going to get into the gaming sector. And that was enough to pop for a pop on the upside initially, until people started to ask, what exactly does that mean? If Netflix is going to start producing mobile games, well, then they don't have to worry about controllers. The game is can be controlled via the phone. If they are talking about having games on the TV, well, then people will need a controller. So are they going to have to sell a physical piece of hardware on top of the monthly subscription? And then who are going to make the games? So they've hired a very experienced executive from the gaming sector, and it's worth reminding ourselves that the computer gaming sector is larger than Hollywood and has more income, and in fact has a much better handle on monetizing games with very reliable cash flows. So this is certainly an innovation on behalf of Netflix. The question is whether they can follow through and how well that will be received, because obviously you need to have a game that people want to play. So that is a bigger question, but the fact that it was unable to hold the move above the $550 area, despite this piece of news, it does suggest that the technology sector generally is now susceptible to additional weakness. And the Nasdaq was in negative territory. What I found interesting is that the Dow Jones was pretty much unchanged. And there's the potential here that we're going to see a lurch back towards value, despite the fact that bond yields have been contracting. And then we also had a strong day for the dollar overall, and gold prices were also in positive territory. And continuing to hold this move above the $1,800 area. And I think it's important to pay attention to the weekly chart because this looks like a reasonably dynamic move. And as long as it's holding that $1,750 area, we can continue to conclude that this is a higher reaction low and that there is potential for additional upside here and that we may be coming out the other end of this corrective phase. Bitcoin was in negative territory today, down over $1,000, and coming back down now to test the lower side of this range that's been forming for the last 2 months. Jay Powell was roundly congratulated in front of the Senate committee in here today for his performance during the pandemic, but he did take the opportunity to say that tokens like Bitcoin will not be required when the Federal Reserve has a digital currency. So then that's important from two perspectives. The first is that until now they've said that they're experimenting and that they're considering and examining and studying digital currencies. And now it's looking increasingly likely that they're serious about it. And then there's the additional point that really does raise the specter that central banks will be quite ambivalent towards independent digital assets. So that obviously raises questions. One of the primary reasons that people have been willing to own Bitcoin and hold it is because it's outside of the normal financial system. But the publicity and the public ledger means that it's rather difficult to hide one's holdings, and because it is literally written into the code which addresses own what. And then there's also the significant challenge of that one is competing against the potential for national digital currencies. Gold does not have the same counterparty risk. It doesn't have the security risk, and it's a lot easier to hide. The number one thing in terms of holding on to one's wealth during a process of appropriation, which is quite likely considering the quantity of debt and the inclination of governments to continue to spend, and this trend towards carbon pricing, which is a central planner's dream. So you have digital currencies where they are going to then acquire a great deal of knowledge that they had never previously thought possible about the number of transactions, the kinds of transactions, and where people are holding and what they're doing with their money. And on top of that, they're remaking the entire global economy. Certainly, this effort is being led by Europe, and I haven't seen one comment yet about just how protectionist this group of policies that the EU has announced this week is. But there is absolutely no doubt that imposing tariffs on imports from countries that do not support the same degree of abide by the same rules in terms of their carbon emissions is protectionist. It's likely to have a significant amount of feedback from emerging markets, and this is obviously something that Europe is doing to protect their domestic economy and also to combat the energy independence that the USA has gained over the course of the last decade. Oil prices were in negative territory again in here today, and it does look like we have at least near-term resistance in the region of that $80 area. I've been very much of the view that we have a bull market in energy prices. This is not a secular bull market. There is no shortage of oil, and it is artificially supported by the willingness of OPEC to hold 8 million barrels a day off the market. When that supply starts to come back in, well, then we are likely to see prices come back down again. And that will also remove some of the inflationary pressures. So, the Federal Reserve is willing to wait it out. And that seems to be the case for most central banks. When we then think about the outlook for the dollar, well, the currency market and the bond market are willing to conclude that inflationary pressures will be transitory. So, the dollar index is now pausing in the region of the trend mean and mostly above it. That's a reasonably positive sign that the outlook is that the dollar will be steadier than it has been over the course of the last 18 months. Of course, we also have these pressures that are building in some of the emerging markets, and the South African rand was stronger yesterday, weaker again in here today. They're sending in the army to, I think, combat the social unrest, and it's absolutely necessary in order to ensure rule of law. But of course, this is a volatile situation, and then we have the additional fact that the Delta variant is spreading rather quickly in Southeast Asia. So it is raising questions for investors about what to expect. Because we know what happened in India. The number of cases shot up, and that provoked a significant response from the healthcare and the government sectors, and then the number of cases came straight back down again. So we're starting to see the number of cases rising in places like Indonesia, and investors, I think, are probably willing to give the benefit of the doubt that if cases are spiking higher, then it will have the same effect on behavior, and that change in behavior will have the cases coming straight back down again. So it would suggest that the downward pressure on currencies in the area is reasonably short term in nature. And we are already starting to see that the rupiah is steadying, and it's a country that has the potential to grow with a large young population. And India has also continued to be really quite firm, and the market continues to hold the region of the peaks. So, even though there's a lot of fear being expressed about this Delta variant, there's not a really a great deal of evidence to suggest that it is more deadly. And the normal course of events from and it makes it just seems it's really not intellectually challenging to accept the fact that viruses generally do tend to become more transmissible because their essence is to survive. So they evolve in order to become more transmissible, and in order to ensure transmissibility, they become less deadly. And that does appear to be what's happening with the coronavirus, that it is becoming more transmissible but less deadly. So I think that that is an additional point that's worth considering, that is why the death rate in India might have been alarming, but relative to the size of the population, then not so alarming. Now, obviously, we might have variants that evolve in a surprising way, but we don't have a great deal of evidence to support that conclusion right now. It does, however, mean that the quantity of money will remain in the system for longer, and that we will have a recovery, and that the global reflation trade is still very much intact. And I think that has to be the base case. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.